Welcome back to Insights from Sight Loss Friendly Church with Matthew Horsepaugh and Lynn Davis. And in this episode, we're continuing our look at the sacraments and moving on to confirmation.
Yes, that's right. And confirmation, as many people might know, is the confirmation of the baptism. It's mainly practiced in high church settings, such as Anglican, Catholic, Lutheran, Methodist, and so on, and not so much practiced in the charismatic churches.
Sure. And in the Anglican Church, it's very important because it's the opportunity at which you can receive Holy Communion for the first time, or at least it used to be. There are some Anglican churches now that are moving towards the practice of First Communion alongside, think, you know, the Catholic Church. But for many Anglican churches, receipt of communion goes hand in hand with confirmation. So there are actually two things to think about. There's the confirmation itself, which obviously, you know, that there are accessibility concerns there. And then there are also the accessibility concerns associated with, well, if you've never taken communion before, this is the point at which you need to be taught how to take it.
Yes, it's the same in the Lutheran Church, which is what I'm going to be talking about, because that is where I have experience with confirmation. I also think confirmation is a bit different in the sense that in Anglican Church it's done at a much younger age as well. It's done around the age of 10, 11, am I right? Whilst in the Lutheran Church it's done at the age of 15, because it marks also your entry into adulthood, which I think is a very Scandinavian tradition.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. So actually, I was confirmed at about 10 or 11. I can't remember exactly how old I was when I was confirmed. But I remember when I was confirmed, I was told that was quite young. But yes, I think we do tend to confirm people when they're ready to be confirmed in the Church of England. So sometimes that is at 10 or 11. Sometimes that's at sort of 13, 14. Sometimes, you know, 18, 19. I've seen adults, you know, actual adults be confirmed at 30 or 40, having been baptized as a child. So we just confirm people when they're ready.
And in terms of confirmation, there's a lot of preparations going on, isn't there? Most notably, there's the confirmation classes. So how did you find that as somebody who is blind?
Yes. So I was very fortunate, really, I suppose, being confirmed as a child, that I had the support of my parents. And the other candidates for confirmation in that particular year were quite a bit older than me. And so it was felt necessary to separate the confirmation classes out. So I actually had confirmation classes with the vicar's wife in the vicarage on a Wednesday afternoon after school. And so my mum would drop me off at the vicarage and my dad would come and pick me up. And the vicar's wife had dealt with me before and knew, you know, how to, you know, because she taught me through young church, if you like, you know, what we used to call Sunday school. So she had a pretty good idea of how to make the classes accessible. And we didn't do much in terms of worksheets and things like that. We did a lot of talking. We did a lot of verbal exploration. We actually walked up to the church two or three times to explore various aspects of the church. We did lots of interactive stuff. So we had, you know, things to touch and things to hold and things to do, you know, quizzes and things like that that would work in a verbal setting. And so there wasn't really any problem there. But I know when I've seen other people do confirmation classes, particularly adults do confirmation classes, there's a lot of books to read. There's a lot of worksheets to do, not necessarily, you know, intense worksheets, but, you know, things like, you know, what is the pulpit? What is the font? What is the lectern? And, you know, you might have pictures of something and, you know, what is this called and all that sort of thing. I think every church does confirmation classes differently. I've seen that in some places and not in others. But yeah, making all of that accessible, I think if you've not got somebody who really is on the ball, it really could be quite a challenge.
I must say that I really did not like the confirmation classes that I went to. So everyone does this as a teenager when people are being 14, the year people turn 15, rather, people are being sent letters to ask whether they want to attend confirmation. They sign up and you're in a class with about 20 or 22 other teenagers. I think we were about 22 people in my class. And it felt very much like a school setting. So it was once a week, every week for about 6 weeks. There is also a confirmation camp, which there wasn't when I did my classes because it was introduced a couple of years later. I'm very glad I didn't go to that because I think as a blind person, I would have felt very out of place. Mainly because when you're a blind teenager, it's really hard to fit in anyway, especially if you're in a mainstream setting. And I was in a mainstream setting and found that it was really hard to make friends with teenagers because there is so much emphasis on being cool and all that stuff. So there is a social side to it, which I found extremely anxiety-inducing, and I'm so happy I got out of camp. There was also the fact that we did a lot of things that involved movies. I remember one time we were watching a 2-hour-long movie and I had just come home from a winter break in South Africa and I really didn't want to go. And I fell asleep during the movie because it wasn't any stimuli for me there. There was no stimulants in terms of, there was no audio description. I just couldn't be bothered with what was going on. I didn't see the relationship between the movie and confirmation. And it was just a bit of a waste of time for me. That is not to say that watching movies in confirmation class isn't a good thing. It just means that a lot more should have been done to ensure that I could actually follow it and get something out of it. At the end of it, I was asked to do the confirmation speech. So because there are so many people being confirmed at any one time, it's being done centrally. So there are about, I think there's about 200 people being confirmed at the same time. And one confirmant, do you say that in English, confirmant?
I mean, it's the bishop in the Church of England, so we don't need a special name for him.
Right. So confirmant in the Lutheran tradition actually means the person who is being confirmed. So that's why I was asking, because I just wasn't sure about the terminology. So one is chosen from the local area or from the two or three different places within the capital of Oslo. And I was chosen to do the speech, which was really cool. So clearly the vicar saw something in me that I could do it, but I still didn't feel like I got anything out of the classes. And I found it a bit of a traumatic experience.
Yeah, and I mean, 200 people being confirmed is really quite impressive. I mean, we do not have that. I sing in the cathedral choir, as many people will know, in Coventry. And quite often, a bit like you, we will have central confirmation services because, as I say, the bishop will need to confirm people. And so it doesn't necessarily happen at the cathedral. You can have a confirmation service at your church if you have enough candidates, but normally you'd need about 10 candidates for that to happen. And you can generally bulk up the numbers by bringing in candidates from other churches. But we would have confirmation services at the cathedral and we'd only have about 10 or 15 people. And that feels like a lot to me. The service is long enough with 10 or 15. So I wouldn't want to think how long it would go on with 200.
It's quite long, it's quite elaborate, but it's also, I think, a very culturally different thing. So a confirmation is very central to Norwegian culture, which is very interesting for a country that is that secular, but it's just one of these things that you do in a certain way, it's got to be done at a certain time. You do some in the spring, some in the autumn, but everyone has to be that same age. It's just a bit of a cultural institution in a way that I don't think it is in England in the same way.
Not at all. So I was very lucky. I was confirmed in my parish church and there were 10 candidates. And I always think it's a bit sad, really, when, I mean, on the one hand, it's great because people get confirmed in the cathedral. You know, it's wonderful. You get an opportunity to go to the cathedral. On the other hand, I think if your parish church is your home, it's a bit sad that you don't get to be confirmed there. But it does bring home the point that many people who are going to be confirmed are going to be confirmed in a place that actually they're not especially familiar with. And I think if I'd had to get confirmed at Birmingham Cathedral or even just in another parish church that wasn't mine, I think I would have felt, I wouldn't have said anything because I was a child and you know, children don't admit weakness at all, right? But I think I would have felt more out of water than I'd have given myself credit for in terms of not knowing my way around the space, not knowing the people, you know, not, I mean, obviously you don't know the bishop, but I wouldn't have even known the vicar. They might run the service slightly differently. You know, they might have hymns in slightly different places. You know, just all of that sort of thing. I would have felt it, you know, it would be really helpful to actually explore the place and maybe actually attend a service at that place prior to confirmation, just to get a feel for how it all works.
Absolutely. I didn't get to do that with my confirmation. So I had to trust in the person who guided me to not trip me up. And it was fine. Absolutely, it was fine. But I do think it's definitely a case for having a run through first in terms of where things are and how everything is going to go.
Mm. And a run through above and beyond the normal run through. I mean, yeah, we had a run through of the confirmation service, you know, with all the other candidates the day before or what have you. And that was very helpful. But still, actually, if it was in an unfamiliar place, I don't think that would be enough.
I agree. So it has to be not your standard run through, but definitely, as you said, above and beyond, where you have a run through almost by yourself with the vicar or the bishop or whoever is able to be there to do the run through with you.
Mm. And turning our attention to communion, I think probably the same sort of idea. Certainly for me, I knew sort of how communion worked in that before we receive communion, you know, as children, before we're confirmed, we can receive a blessing. So we still go up to the altar to receive the blessing. We still kneel down at the altar rail to receive the blessing. So I knew where the altar rail was. I knew where the altar was. You know, I understood that part of the action. But there are things that I think sighted people can just pick up by looking at other sighted people in terms of how to receive the bread. What is the etiquette for doing that, which is, you know, to hold your hands out and to have the bread put into your hand, and then you take your hand to your mouth. But, you know, that etiquette needs to be taught. And similarly with the chalice, you know, I certainly found it very helpful before confirmation to actually, there was a chalice of water, and to actually learn how to take the chalice from the server, how to, I mean, not necessarily, not literally how to sip water, but you know what I mean? You know, what is an appropriate amount to take from the chalice? And just all of that stuff that I think is probably obvious to everybody else, but not obvious to people with sight loss.
No, and we have spoken about communions before and how they can be a bit of a minefield, and how I got tipsy when I accidentally sipped too much from the chalice. And also, there are different ways of doing communions in different churches, right? So some churches might want you to dip the bread in the chalice. I've seen that. But some churches want you to sip from the actual thing. And some churches give you individual cups. So it's very helpful for someone with sight loss to ask, how does this particular church do it?
Mm. And especially, I think, at something like confirmation, where it's your first time receiving it, so you want to get it right. I mean, if you bumble about a bit in a new church, I mean, everybody bumbles about a bit in a new church, that's fine. But it's not what you want to be doing, you know, 10 minutes after you've been confirmed.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So it's good to be proactive and approach the person with sight loss and offer to go through the communion ritual with them prior to confirmation.
Indeed. Well, that's all we've got time for on this episode of Insights from Sight Loss Friendly Church. Hope you've enjoyed it and you'll come back and join us again next week. In the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can, of course, phone us on 01858 438 260, or you can email SLFC, standing for Sight Loss Friendly Church, at torchtrust.org. We'd love to hear from you if you have a question that you'd like answering on this podcast, or indeed if you'd like to hear more about the Sight Loss Friendly Church initiative from Torch Trust and how to be a part of that. For now though, from myself, Matthew Horsepool, and Lynn Davis, thanks for listening, and bye for now.